did life originate and evolve billions of years ago? And can we expect to find life, or even intelligent beings, in other areas of the universe? Could we, for instance, expect to find a clone of the Earth? These are the tantalizing questions being looked at by scientists who study the discipline of astrobiology. The fascinating topic of astrobiology is the theme of a seminar being held later this week in the Vatican by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and is being attended by experts from all over the world. One of those experts who will present the closing paper at the Academy's seminar is Chris Imper, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, who has published a popular book on astrobiology called The Living Cosmos. I sat down with him to discover how close we are to getting some of the answers to those tantalizing questions.
Well, astrobiology is a very exciting field because in the last decade we've discovered hundreds of planets around other stars. So astronomers think it's just a matter of time before we find life somewhere else.
But one of the most baffling and exciting questions is about the origins of life. Are we any closer to finding out the answers to that?
That's actually the hard part of the subject, because it's essentially historical science, and it's entirely possible that the oldest rocks and the oldest remnants of life on Earth have been destroyed by time, and so it may not be possible to answer that question.
But is it true that, because I'm a lay person on this subject, I admit it, is it true that life has basically evolved from grains of dust, a chemical reaction?
It's evolved from very simple chemistry on the very early Earth. It's entirely possible that life started over 4 billion years ago on the Earth when it was an incredibly inhospitable place. We'd have been dead within 10 seconds if we'd lived on the Earth then. And life has essentially radiated into every possible environment and has gripped the planet for 4 billion years.
How do we manage to evolve, as you say, to the sophisticated life forms that we see today?
Well, because 4 billion years is an awful long time, and for a couple of billion years, life was microscopic. So you could have come back to the Earth at any time in its previous 4 billion years, and for 90% of that time, the largest life form would be microscopic, so essentially invisible.
Okay, looking beyond our own universe, our own solar system, what kind of life form do you think we could expect to find in these other worlds?
Most astronomers expect that microbial life, bugs if you like, are going to be widespread because microbes exist in amazingly inhospitable environments on the Earth, and there are many inhospitable environments out there in space on planets and moons, and so we expect there'll be microbes on many of those.
But how soon are we likely to get those definitive answers, do you think?
So it's a hard research question. Most people would probably place a bet that within a decade we might have evidence for life somewhere else. Now, that evidence might actually come within the solar system if we have a good mission to Mars or perhaps Titan or Europa, but it also could come from a more distant planet.
Okay, turning to the question of extraterrestrial intelligence or intelligent beings, I mean, this is a fascinating issue. Do you believe that it could exist, and if so, in what form?
I think if the universe is hospitable for life, and that means there may be 100 million habitable and inhabited planets in the galaxy, but that's inhabited by microbes, then it only needs a small fraction of those to evolve intelligence and sophistication for there to be potential pen pals in the galaxy. And that's more interesting to many people because it's a potential threat to our self-importance.
But how do we go about searching for them? And then if we find them, how do we communicate with them?
So there's an activity called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary of trying to send radio signals out into space. Those are our messages. And also listen for analogous radio signals. And they've been met with what they call the Great Silence for 50 years. And it's hard to understand how to interpret a silence. Does it mean they're not there? Does it mean we're trying to communicate with them in the wrong way? Does it mean they're there and they don't care about us? There's many ways to interpret that.
But if we did find evidence, or at least indications, what would be the implications of that find?
I think they'd be sobering because there's something called the timing argument, which says that since it's so recent for humans to have developed technology, space travel, and the ability to understand the universe, any civilization we encounter is likely to be much more advanced than us and dwarf us in sophistication and perhaps intelligence. And, you know, maybe we're not ready for that information. Or maybe they actually wouldn't care about us. We're too insignificant for them to bother with.
It's to be hoped, as you say, because otherwise it could be a clear threat.
Exactly. So there's the, you know, the Douglas Adams scenario where they want to put a highway through our part of the galaxy and they just obliterate the Earth to do their road project. So we hope it's not something like that.
How does religion or the sacred fit into this equation of astrobiology and this exploration of the origins of life?
Well, very directly, because most of the world's religions posit that humans are special, either because they possess souls or because they have a privileged relationship with the Creator. But if that's a Creator who's also responsible for perhaps millions of other life forms, many of which might be intelligent, then our special relationship, you know, must come into question.
So is it an uneasy relationship, if you like? Is in some way there a fear to find out the answers?
I think it's a little uneasy. I think at the moment, because astronomers still only know of one place in the universe with life, and that's this planet, everything's fairly comfortable because scientists are free to speculate about intelligent life in the universe. Once we have evidence and information, then the game changes, because then we have to assimilate that information and see what it implies for our faith, for our spirituality, for our sense of ourselves.
So in what direction is astrobiology going? You know, what are the future challenges? And do we need to, in fact, challenge existing assumptions?
I think the biggest challenge in astrobiology is that the evidence for life, when we find it, may not be unambiguous. It may be evidence that's a little open to interpretation. Unless we go to Mars and find microbes in the rocks, subsurface Mars, then we'll be sure. But some of the information we might get from planets far beyond may be open to interpretation. So people want definitive evidence. They don't want sort of ambiguous evidence. That's one challenge. And the other challenge is that space is huge, and the signals we're looking for are extremely faint, extremely difficult to gather. And so astronomers actually don't have quite good enough tools to find life in distant places yet.
But they're getting there.
They're getting there. These are multi-billion-dollar missions that we're going to need in space, usually in orbit, that will go within the solar system to the best places or look for planets around nearby stars at a very high level of detail.
You've written a book called The Living Cosmos. What kind of message were you trying to get across there, or were you trying to make the subject more accessible to the man and woman in the street?
It was the latter, but I was also trying to get over the fact that many people are not aware of, that the search for life in the universe after centuries of speculation has got to a fascinating point where I think within our lifetimes we'll have the answer to that question of whether or not we're alone.
I was speaking to Professor Chris Imper, astronomer and expert on astrobiology.